It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The tragic death of an 8-year-old child on a Dane County dairy farm is the focus of a recent investigation by ProPublica that exposes larger issues that we'll talk about around hazardous work environments and immigrant labor and living conditions. About every 3 days, a child dies in an agriculture-related incident, according to the National Children's Center for Rural and Agricultural Health and Safety. Call in with questions and comments about dangers on the farm and what to do, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Mariam Jamil is an engagement reporter working on community-resourced investigations at ProPublica. Mariam, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Hi, thank you for having me.
So you're looking really more broadly now at the dairy industry and agriculture. Can you hone in on what does the death of an 8-year-old boy on a Dane County farm illustrate about farm safety? What are some of those overarching messages?
Yeah, one of the things we were kind of consistently surprised to learn as we reported this is just how little attention was being paid to the conditions on these farms. Most of the farms in Wisconsin that have employees are employing immigrants from Latin American countries. The vast majority are undocumented immigrants, and they're really in situations that make it very unlikely for them to complain if an issue should come up with how they're being paid or with their safety or with their living conditions. As you mentioned earlier, the presence on farms of children is fairly widespread. And unfortunately, that does lead to approximately 100 children each year in the U.S. dying on these farms. And there are conditions that Barbara Lee will go into that are preventable, that just are constant. And so between the workplace conditions on farms being just far less than adequate often, and the conditions for safety on children, there are many things that came up in this story that we hope are illuminated and hopefully can improve as time goes on and people pay more attention to these issues.
You illuminated a horrible preventable death of Jefferson Rodriguez, this 8-year-old Nicaraguan boy living with his father on the dairy farm in Wisconsin in 2019. And I just want to acknowledge it's really horrible to hear about the death, and that also want to acknowledge that you relive this in the telling of it each time in as you pursue quality journalism and the truth. How did he die? Can you elaborate?
Yeah, thank you. It's a terrible incident. This was a boy who came with his father. They came seeking better economic opportunities after, you know, many years of trying to get by in Nicaragua and in Costa Rica. And so they had been working on this farm for a few months. Sorry, I said they, but it's only the father. I should clarify, Jefferson was just a boy who lived on the farm with his father and was not a working individual. So dairy farm work is unlike a lot of work in other industries in that it is happening at all hours of the day and night. Cows need to be milked usually about 3 times a day. And that means, you know, at 10 p.m., 11 p.m., hours of the a.m., you know, people are working on that. And so Jefferson was a kid who wasn't in school, didn't have a ton to do. Sometimes he would call his mom in Nicaragua, but he would just get bored at night while his father was milking cows. So he was in the habit of coming down and chatting with the workers. So that night there was a new worker who was employed. He had just had one shift earlier in the day, and he was quickly trained to use a machine called a skid steer. It's kind of like a tractor, but smaller. And it's used to clean the manure from farms and basically, yeah, get things in order so the cows can go where they need to go. Okay, so that worker gets into this skid steer, and it's so dark. The lights apparently didn't work on this machine, nor did its reverse alarm. An engineer inspected the machine a couple of months later and said, basically, if these things had been working, this accident might have been prevented. But anyway, so he wasn't expecting a kid to be in a work area. He didn't know this kid was there. And the boy, you know, who knows what was going through his mind, but he obviously also, there wasn't communication. And so he starts putting this machine in reverse. And all of a sudden he feels it, you know, rocky under the machine. And then he sees a body in front of him. And it just happened super quickly, just like that, in an area that was dark, to a worker and a child who didn't expect this nor want this.
I'm going to reintroduce you here. As we talk about farm safety, ProPublica engagement reporter Mariam Jamil investigated the death of an 8-year-old child on a dairy farm in Wisconsin. You can join in the conversation at 800-642-1234. Your reporting found that Dane County Sheriff's deputies mistakenly assumed Jefferson's father, Jose, had been driving the skid steer. How was that assumption made?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So many deputies showed up that night from Dane County Sheriff's Office and Columbia County, and only one of them was considered proficient in Spanish or to have any ability in Spanish. All the interviews fell to her. She was the only one who could have done any interviews. And so when she got to interviewing Jose, Jose was so distraught. His child had just died. He was besides himself. He was pulling out blades of grass. He was rocking back and forth. He was screaming. He was crying. So in general, the communication was difficult. But what it really came down to was she thought she asked him whether he was driving. And unfortunately, like with her level of Spanish, that's not what she asked. When my colleague interviewed her, and both of us are Spanish speakers, and asked, you know, how did you phrase this in Spanish? The sheriff's deputy quickly told her, and it was immediately evident that from the way she phrased it, someone would not know they were being asked, you know, who or what, you know, was driving the skid steer. And we had interviewed Jose prior to speaking with the sheriff's deputy. And he had told us, you know, no one asked me. If someone had asked me, I would have told them right away I wasn't driving, but that never came up. Mm-hmm. And there was just such a failure of communication. And that really speaks to some of the kind of systemic practices in law enforcement, and in particular in Dane County Sheriff's Office, where people self-report their language abilities. If someone says they're proficient, if someone says they're fluent, it's like, okay, great. We are noting that and we'll call you to do this work. And we spoke with other police officers at the Madison Police Department who explained to us how things work there, where again, people are self-reporting, but they have a staff that has a greater proficiency, and just among themselves, they kind of keep greater checks on who's doing what work and what their language ability is. And one of the officers really laid out for us how there's a difference between, she put it like muddling your way through a traffic stop and investigating an incident like the death of a child.
Something so major. And so Jefferson's death is ruled an accident, and yet the records show that Jose, the father, is the one that caused his death. You know, what does the sheriff's investigation say about how farm injuries and deaths are responded to by state and local governments?
Yeah, you know, it just seems like nobody's really paying attention to the workplace safety issues that lead to these incidents. So OSHA, the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, that's part of the Federal Department of Labor, is really the only government agency that maybe would have inspected an incident like this to really look out for, you know, what caused it when it comes down to it. What changes could be made at this farm in the practices, in the training, in the condition of the skid steer to prevent it in the future. But in this case, Jefferson was a child and not a worker. Mm-hmm. And so they didn't inspect the incident. They also, though, they generally won't inspect an incident where there was even a death of an adult worker if the farm had fewer than 11 workers. And then law enforcement, back to your question, you know, they're not usually ever trained in occupational safety, and they're, you know, trying to figure out, you know, what happened and was there something that would be considered criminal at play. And that wasn't the case here. And so it just sort of, the case was closed and I think everybody moved on. And I think, you know, they treated, from what we understand, was talking with Jose and looking at records and talking to some people in law enforcement, like they treated the situation with a lot of compassion and so much empathy for Jose. But at the end of the day, like neither the investigation wasn't handled appropriately. And we still don't have anybody who's really anybody that's really looking into cases like this one to prevent them in the future from a government position.
ProPublica engagement reporter Mariam Jamil, her latest investigation exposes the dangers immigrant workers face and their children when working on Wisconsin dairy farms. Call in with your questions, your experiences, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The nonprofit newsroom ProPublica brings us their deep reporting into the 2019 death of an 8-year-old immigrant boy, Jefferson Rodriguez, on a Dane County dairy farm. And this tragedy, it sheds light on the perils facing undocumented immigrant workers and their families. Call in with your questions, your reflections. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. ProPublica engagement reporter Mariam Jamil stays with us. You know, when you look at these farms, and in particular this now defunct dairy, D&K, what are the conditions like there? Can you bring us closer into the dairy itself and access farmers typically have to first aid kits or emergency medical training, or what the conditions were like on this farm?
Yeah, we spoke to various workers who had worked there in the past to get a sense of the conditions. And we also had milk inspection records from the Department of Agriculture to sort of paint a clearer picture. We unfortunately were not able to speak with the owners of the farm because there's an ongoing related lawsuit. And so we were able to get, you know, some of their words through depositions. And they were made aware of everything, but we didn't get to speak with them firsthand. So I just want to clarify that also in portraying their farm. But you know, this was a farm where, first of all, so workers often live on dairy farms in the Madison area. And so they live in the housing that's provided to them. And sometimes that housing is not necessarily, you know, housing that many of us would want to live in. It's not, there are things that aren't necessarily in working order. In this particular situation, Jose and his child Jefferson and two other employees lived in sort of an apartment that had been created above a barn, and so above a milking parlor. And so there were many cows passing through the same building that they lived in every day. From what we hear, you know, there was a strong smell of manure. The floors rattled from the vibration of the milking machinery. It was not, as another worker put it, it was not a place for a child.
I just can't imagine them living above that. As a parent of 8-year-old twin boys, how could they live above this milking parlor and this child with nothing to do all day but stay close and out of the way? It doesn't add up.
Yeah, it was very shocking for us to learn about it too. And you know, we try to get as much context as we can. You know, we've heard a couple of other people say, you know, sometimes there are kind of a loft style, like apartments built above barns. But in the deposition, the owner of the farm kind of recharacterized the apartment and said it was intended more of a break room, as more of a break room, not as a place for people to live full time. But from our interviews with various people, they live there full time. And you know, we've only seen so much housing on farms. Our scope is limited so far, and we're trying to learn more. If that's, you know, something anybody wants to lend us insight to, we're really eager to get a full understanding. But from what we've seen so far, you know, like I said, workers are really like subject. These are people who are in a pretty difficult situation. Often they're coming with debt from migrating here. They are people who do not usually have permits to work legally. They're working for a wage that is, you know, a legal wage usually, but it's very low for the amount of, for just the intensity and the rigor of what's required for them. Like there's a reason that these jobs are going to people who are undocumented and in that vulnerable set of positions and aren't.
I would just like to jump in here and say, Jose, yeah, you said was making $9.50 an hour, and taxes were being taken out of that $9.50 an hour.
Yes, thank you for pointing that out. I think often people assume like, oh, if you're undocumented, you're being paid maybe in cash and you have access to that full wage, and maybe it adds up to being a wage that's fairly reasonable. But that's not the case. Taxes were being removed, and I think taxes are very consistently removed from people in his situation's wages.
It's astounding too that here is a father and his son who have traveled all this way from Nicaragua, made it somehow to Wisconsin. You know, what they encountered on that journey, you know, lacking food or water, and then to get to Dane County with all its first world assets and more, and this would happen. Why wasn't the child in school?
You know, Jose intended to put his child in school in the upcoming school year. There wasn't much left to the school year when they arrived. And I think a big aspect of this is like language barriers and mobility. So people who are undocumented don't have access to a driver's license. I think when you first get to a country, there's a lot that's there to figure out in general. But he pointed us to, like, if he had known how, if he had someone to help him, he would have liked to have Jefferson in school and off the farm. That's, you know, when he was figuring out coming here and the family was debating, you know, what do we do with this child? Will it be safe? He heard from a friend, like, you know, no, the kid will go to school during the day and that will take care of some of it. But that ended up being harder than met the eye. And then another aspect of this is childcare, just in general. I think this is something that people who own farms and work on farms and many other industries have a huge issue with. Like, childcare is not affordable or accessible in general to most people. And on a farm, it's like you can't just step away. You can't, taking care of your child at the same time as running a farm or working on a farm is almost impossible. So that's why we see the large number of deaths that we see each year.
ProPublica's Mariam Jamil investigated the death of an 8-year-old boy in Wisconsin. You can join in at 800-642-1234. A little more broadly here, what else are you hoping to learn about the lives of farm workers, Midwest farm workers, Wisconsin, through this reporting?
Yeah, so we are continuing, hopefully for quite a while, to look into issues related to farms. We're especially focused on workplace safety. One of the things that we noticed about the dairy industry is that there is a high chance that incidents are not reported. So maybe, you know, injuries, different maybe issues related to wages that aren't fully paid, housing conditions. There's very little oversight of all of these things. And so we're hoping to talk to as many people as we can, both, you know, farmers and workers alike, and try to shed light on conditions that just don't really seem to be well recorded elsewhere.
And meanwhile, with Jose's story continuing, it's set to go to trial. The lawsuit, I understand, he's attempting to clear his record. It goes to trial in June. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct.
What might come of that? Like, what are you expecting or watching for there?
You know, it remains to be seen. Sometimes cases settle before they reach trial. It's a civil suit. We haven't... We don't know what'll come of it. I think the like one outcome that tends to come from these cases is if Jose were to win or to get to settle, like he would get money, which hopefully he hopes to return to Nicaragua. He has another child there, and one of the things that he's really thinking about is spending the time he has with that child. So that's something that could be helped by that lawsuit, possibly.
Mariam, thank you for joining us and bringing us closer to your reporting.
Thank you so much for having me to talk about this.
Mariam Jamil is an engagement reporter at ProPublica's Washington, D.C. newsroom. We have links to ProPublica's reporting on the dairy industry and how to get involved in it at wpr.org/mornings. And we continue the conversation. Pose your questions to the National Children's Center for Rural and Agricultural Health and Safety at Marshfield Clinic, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We examine the dangers of children on farms sparked by this ProPublica investigation where state and local authorities were horrified by conditions on a Dane County dairy farm and circumstances in the death of an 8-year-old child who was run over by a skid steer in 2019. Call in with questions and concerns about workplace safety in children on farms, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at wpr.org. Barbara Lee is a senior research scientist with the National Children's Center for Rural and Agricultural Health and Safety, which is based at the Marshfield Clinic Research Institute. Barbara, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning, Kate. Thank you for having me.
We've been talking with ProPublica's Mariam Jamil about her reporting, and you were a source for her reporting. How typical is the situation that led to Jefferson Rodriguez's death?
It's difficult to say that that's really typical because in Wisconsin, the majority of dairy farms are run and really having their own family children conduct a lot of the work and be in the environment. This situation is, I think, becoming more typical. And what we have to keep in mind is that agriculture in and of itself is one of the most dangerous occupations in the country. And then putting any child into a dangerous work situation can lead to a traumatic event like this.
How common, though, are child injuries or deaths on farms? What does your data tell you?
Well, there's really no official numbers for the United States. We used to get information from the government on injuries and deaths on farms, but those systems no longer collect data. What we know is that on average, there's about 100 deaths on farms across the country, and about 4 of those happen in Wisconsin each year. And what's interesting for us is we see the news, it comes across our desk sometimes on a daily basis. And there's kind of some typical scenarios of what's going on. And it's most surprising to people that about 2/3, and sometimes more than that, of the children who are killed on farms are not working. These are little kids who just happen to be in a very dangerous work situation.
And so what you're saying, though, too, there aren't any numbers on how many children actually are living on these working dairy farms where their parents are working as well.
Correct. The last time the government collected any numbers on that was in 2014. And we know the numbers of farms have gone down. The number of kids and families has gone down.
You know, we often hear these referred to as farm accidents. And I think, you know, I would imagine you want to clarify that because these accidents are preventable. Is that right?
That's right. You know, we in the world of injury prevention do not use the word accident. We think that that really implies it's an act of God. It's not preventable, but we know that injuries and injury events are very predictable and preventable. And if you look at the automobile industry, they eliminated using the word accident more than 20 years ago. So we really prefer that people call it what it is. It's an injury event. It might be a tractor crash, some kind of a crushing and machinery event, but it's definitely not an accident. And honestly, we kind of go nuts when people use the word freak accident, because these things we see repeatedly. They just are not that rare.
When you discuss typical scenarios, what are some things that seem to come up over and over? Is it the machinery on the farm? Is it something else? Is it the cattle? What are these encounters like?
Well, I've been reading these news clippings and hearing stories for over 30 years. And if you ask me, the typical, the most common is a father or a grandfather taking a young child on a tractor. They're an extra rider on the tractor, or it's a joyride, or they're there because they don't have any other childcare. And something happens, you know, the tractor hits a bump, it hits a curb, ditch, and the child falls out, is run over. And even a tractor cab is not a safe place for a child.
Let's take a call now. Dan is joining us from St. Croix County. Dan, hi.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning. What would you like to bring up?
Well, I'll tell you that I am not a farmer, but I am involved with county government. I'm a county supervisor in St. Croix County. And I do work with dairy farmers in many aspects, and I'm concerned with regulation in some ways. I do not mean to minimize in any way the tragedy that this family has had happen to them, but I'm also concerned with the ability of farmers to do business and exist. We have so many dairy farmers who are suffering financially because of the fluctuations in market. Just because we see prices going up in the grocery stores, farmers don't see additional profits. So if regulation is the answer, and I think this should be said, that also regulation should include protections for the farmers, that farmers themselves shouldn't bear the cost of additional protections, because in not only people who come from other countries to work on our farms are hurt, people who belong to farm families are also injured in farm accidents.
Dan, you bring up such important points, and I want to have Barbara respond here as you look at those safety regulations. They come with a cost, Barbara, and can eat into potential profits, as Dan points out.
Right. I think you bring up a good point about what is the role of public policy and regulations. And in the case of Jefferson, I think a lot of different systems failed. He wasn't in school. The farm wasn't necessarily up to safety standards. The equipment wasn't safe. But it's not always that regulations are going to help in that area. We really think that in terms of children and farming, it's a tough call, you know. People want to farm, they want to have kids, but we really believe that we have to set the priorities of where are the children when the work is going on, and can I afford to be a farmer and a parent at the same time? So systems like better childcare, better access to safety, personal protective equipment, and general kind of safety training and support for improving the overall safety of a farm is really important.
And you also have to think about the logistics, improve childcare, and yet there are so many childcare deserts. And on a farm in a rural area, it might be miles and miles away to the nearest childcare provider if they can get a slot.
I agree. And that's a big issue that we're trying to work on now, is finding public support for better childcare services so that parents, if they do want to work full-time on the farm, they have some options where their children are going to be. Certainly during the school year, it helps, you know, if they've got school-aged kids. But other than that, during the summer, during breaks, and especially for the little tykes, if they don't have off-farm childcare, you're put into a situation where you're trying to get the work done while you're watching the kids, and it puts both in jeopardy because you're less productive at work and your child may be put in harm's way.
There are children working on farms and children living on them. When you look at these injuries, is one group of children more at risk?
Definitely, the numbers would show that it's the little children, 7 and under. Just in Wisconsin in the last few years, most of the children who were killed were like 2 years old or 4 years old. Again, these are people who are not contributing to the work and they should just be in a better place. But at the same time, I think it's important for us to acknowledge that farming is a wonderful place for kids to grow up. Parents want their kids to get acquainted with the farm environment. And the question is, how can they do that safely so that a child who has that great opportunity to grow up on a farm also has a chance to be healthy and safe and enjoy the best that farming can give them?
I see the tractor ride there is coming to mind, and just giving that child what it is like, something that perhaps that mother or father also had at their age. And I think what you're trying to say here is safety first. You really have to look that this is machinery, and there could be a lot of risks involved for a young child.
Absolutely. And the tractor is a perfect example of an old tradition that has to change. And we say it's easier to bury a tradition than a child.
Talking about farm safety with Barbara Lee, a Wisconsin scientist based at the Marshfield Clinic Research Institute, you can join in with your questions, your insights and experiences, 800-642-1234. Barbara, something that hasn't come up in our conversation is how often children are injured by toxins, toxic fertilizers or pesticides, chemicals on the farm that are used on the fields, on the crops?
So that's a good question, and we really don't have good data to tell us about that. There's no required reporting of it, and it typically turns out to be a more chronic problem for them. So they're not going to the emergency room where we might be able to count the numbers. The other thing to keep in mind is the packaging of a lot of these chemicals is much better. It's stronger, and they're used in different ways than, you know, when I first started, we had a lot of kids that would ingest dairy pipeline cleaner because it looked like water. These types of cleaning systems and cleaning fluids are now locked up and packaged such that little kids rarely can get access to them.
How should they be how should they be on the farm in terms of locked up or in separate areas, or how do you see them being used in terms of on the farm and put away in a place that can't be accessed unless by an adult?
Well, I suppose you could think of it like a loaded firearm. You know, how do you keep that away from children so that they don't have access to it? And then you limit the number of people who actually do have access to chemicals such as that.
Barbara Lee is director of the National Children's Center for Rural and Agricultural Health and Safety based at Marshfield Clinic here in Wisconsin. Bring your questions, your comments about farming operations and the safety concerns for children. What's coming up for you? 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. ProPublica continues to investigate safety concerns on dairy farms in Wisconsin and the Midwest. We look at next steps for how to improve workplace safety, especially when children are around these operations. Still time to surface questions, your comments, 800-642-1234. Barbara Lee is Senior Research Scientist at the National Children's Center for Rural and Agricultural Health and Safety. Let's bring in Tom in Watertown. Hi, Tom. What would you like to convey?
Well, I grew up on a farm, and the kids grew up on a farm, and I've worked on it since, actually, I was in the barn before I was even in grade school. And our kids have been, we took our kids to all the farmer safety stuff and the tractor safety. They went through the course, and I'm all for safety, but we can't just lock our kids in either. I probably learned more helping my dad and stuff on a farm than, and I think the main thing here is when you're doing your work and you got a kid along, you got to slow her down about 3-4 gears. You can't be, you know, just take it slow.
Be slow and deliberate. Yes. Tom, I want to ask Barbara here to join in on what is your reaction to Tom's story?
Well, Tom, it's very typical. And we hear this a lot from people, you know, the traditions that have been passed along and the things that kids have done. And I commend you for your participation in the safety events, and certainly for considering that working with children, you need to take a different approach, go much slower and a lot more supervision and that type of thing. So I think the first thing we think about is having the farm safe for the adult workers so that the equipment is up to standards and you have safe protocols and policies in terms of who can do what by when, and then get the kids involved when they're ready, physically, emotionally, socially, to take on different types of activities. So I think there are good things that happen. We know there's great things that happen when kids can grow up on a farm, but let's just be wise about when they're involved and how they're involved.
Tom brings up farm safety courses, tractor safety courses. How accessible are these across Wisconsin?
Well, unfortunately, they're less accessible than they used to be. Part of that is funding, part of that is demand. So we do have a number of resources online available. Our own center has a website, cultivatesafety.org, that has multiple guidelines for children's work, different types of work, guidelines for developing safe play areas on farms, and a lot of information that way. There's also Safety Day events that go on, and then certainly the tractor certification course that the state tries to provide when they can, that is for kids starting at the age of 12.
What might a safe play area on a farm be like?
Well, just imagine a yard next to the house.
Yes.
That has a fence, a nice fenced in area. And we recommend that you have use some of the farming things like a calf hutch or a tire for a sand box, little play areas. And certainly an important part is a place for the adults to sit. So there can be adult maybe sitting and folding laundry or something outside on the picnic table while the kids are playing in that enclosed area. The biggest recommendation we always have is a physical barrier between the child and the dangerous work area or the driveway.
And so staying in that area and having that adult present really helpful there, that separates maybe the other barns on the property and the fields and other areas where the work is underway.
Right. And you know what? In that play area, you can have your toy tractors, your trucks, you know, your skid steers and your ATVs, your all your fun little things that make you feel close to the farm environment without being exposed to the hazards.
I want to turn to federal regulations on the farm. Family farms, they're exempt from child labor restrictions that are enforced by federal authorities. And so children of any age can work on the farm, no restrictions on the number of hours they work. Should there be tighter regulations here?
I'm not sure that that's possible to do that. We would like to see definitely the list of hazardous occupation orders updated that shows for kids working in other industries, such as operating machinery or handling chemicals. We think that those ages should be the same, whether you're in agriculture or construction or mining. But in terms of regulations for kids working on family farms, I just don't see that happening because it would just be extremely hard to enforce. However, the one thing that I think we've been remiss on is following up with legal consequences for when there's unsafe or reckless behavior. And we know that in a number of cases where a child dies, people are just goofing off, or somebody is intoxicated and taking a child for a joyride on a tractor. In those types of cases, I think it's important that the legal system does get involved and look at, is this some kind of gross negligence or reckless endangerment of the child, and then follow up in order to really ensure that that farm does not become the site of future tragedies for kids.
Talking about farm safety with Barbara Lee, Wisconsin scientist at the Marshfield Clinic Research Institute. Still time to join in at 800-642-1234. Barbara, the New York Times reported how migrant children are often working really treacherous jobs in our country, including many agricultural jobs. Could more enforcement of existing child labor laws help protect children on farms?
Certainly, if they are hired children and doing seasonal work, definitely the regulations should be looking at what are the jobs these kids are doing, making sure they're not exposed to pesticides or heavy machinery, this type of thing, and then really looking at the hours of work so that we don't have kids, you know, as young as 12 working 14 or 16 hour days.
You know, research institutes like yours are often guided by really good data. And it sounds like in this particular area, there's a good bit of murky data, and that you're really charged with having to find that with the absence of some sound federal data. You know, how do you know what to focus on in the absence of really good numbers at a research institute?
It's a good question. We really do depend on stories from people, and our center collects news clippings. We have the largest collection of publicly available news. It's in a database, and this captures all of the states in our country, and we rely on that to show us trends. So, for example, we talk about Jefferson, the Nicaraguan boy who was run over by a skid steer. And that's a trend that we see is really growing, that the increased use of those skid steers, because they're kind of like small tractors. They're used by young people, and they're used more often and around the clock. And little kids are just not visible when a skid steer is moving quickly in and around a barn. So we rely on the news, we rely on our colleagues across the country to highlight what are the big issues.
Barbara, thank you for joining us.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Barbara Lee is a research scientist, senior research scientist at the National Children's Center for Rural and Agricultural Health and Safety, which is based at the Marshfield Clinic Research Institute. And earlier, we heard from ProPublica's Mariam Jamil, co-author of the report, The Investigation, Death on a Dairy Farm. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.